Hi, I'm Yusuf Zine. My latest TVO Today podcast is on how a Canadian ends up in a Chinese prison and if he's even alive. Listen and subscribe to Extradition. Available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Help TVO create a better world through the power of learning. Visit TVO.org and make a tax-deductible donation today.
Will other Ontario municipalities follow the Hamilton example? And what do landlords think of those efforts? Well, let's find out. On the line from New Westminster, British Columbia via Skype, Patrick Johnstone. He is the mayor of New Westminster, British Columbia. And with us here in studio, Tony Irwin, president, CEO of FERPO, the Federation of Rental Housing Providers of Ontario, and Parthi Kandaval, who is Toronto City Councillor for Scarborough Southwest. And we're delighted to have you back to our program. Mm-hmm. Have you been here before?
No.
This is your first time.
Yeah,
good stuff, Councillor. Okay, happy to have you here. And your worship, thank you for being there on the left coast for us. We're grateful that you could spare some time for us as well. Parthi, let's start with this. There's a community in your ward that is dealing with some rent eviction or demoviction, describe it as you like. Lenmore Court in Scarborough. Tell us what's happening there.
Thank you for having me on, Steve. You know, that was, you know, the canary in the coal mine. To the context of my by-election, we saw a rise, a disturbing trend of number of rent evictions, dem evictions that begged the question from all classes, really, who recognize, you know, the need to have mixed income neighborhoods. So in the midst of housing crisis, why does our system allow existing affordable rental housing to become unavailable? And it becomes a question about tenant protections and tenant rights. So that is an example of a growing trend. In the last 5 years, we've seen a 300% increase in rent evictions across Ontario.
Part of the answer to the question you've raised may be in these numbers. Sheldon, can I ask you to bring this graph up? And for those who are listening on podcast, I'm going to read along here. Here's a graph looking at the Greater Toronto Area and when purpose-built rental housing was constructed. And if we take a look at this graph, before 1960, more than 80,000 units. Then over the next 20 years, 1960 to 79, almost a quarter of a million units. And then we're going to look at the next 20-year period, 1980 to 1999, 20,000 units, fewer than 10% of the previous two decades. And finally, let's get you up to date, the year 2000 to 2022, again, about the same, almost 24,000 units. In other words, in the Greater Toronto Area, where, frankly, most of the tenants of this province live, 87% of the housing intended for rental use was built more than 40 years ago. So, okay, that takes me to you, and I've got a couple of questions here for starters. Would you acknowledge this phenomenon known as rent evictions is happening out there?
Absolutely, Steve.
Okay, we got that on the record. How does the age of all of the facilities that we're talking about here influence that?
Yeah, so I think the chart you put up is very, very instructive in that it demonstrates the age of our rental stock, as we've talked about before. And I think that, of course, is a direct correlation to why we're seeing more applications for vacant possession to conduct significant renovations. I think, you know, freezing buildings in time is not realistic. But on the other hand, we have to be able to have a system that is fairer and transparent and addresses things like notice periods, compensation, right to return. I think we have to have a system. We have to acknowledge this is happening. It's going to keep happening more often in more places. So let's have a provincial framework that addresses it.
Let's see if we can learn anything from what they did in British Columbia. And your worship, I'll bring you in at this point here. You have a rent eviction bylaw in New Westminster, BC. It apparently even survived a court challenge and an appeal. So tell me what you were trying to do out there.
Well, much like Parthi, we saw a massive increase in rent evictions in around 2018-2019 period. We have much like I suspect in his ward, we had a lot of that older rental stock, buildings that were built through CMHC support for purpose-built rental back in the 60s and 70s, and they were reaching a stage of life where they were affordable. You know, they were safe buildings, they were comfortable buildings for the people who lived in them, but they were affordable. When we saw groups of what investors would come in and purchase what were these formerly often sort of mom-and-pop operations that had been there for, you know, 20 years, the same owner, purchased by investors, and the investment model was simply rent evict everybody who was living there, do some minor upgrades, a little bit of paint, maybe a cabinet replacement, and then rent it out at a much higher rate. That was their investment model. So we saw a need to step in and protect people as people were losing their homes. We're in a city here where rental vacancies have been under 1% for more than a decade. So if you lose that home that you've been in for 20 years, the opportunity of you finding a replacement home at a reasonable rate, you know, if you have a disability, if you have pets, if you have kids, it adds challenges, especially to that. So we felt the need. We needed to step in. We brought in a rent eviction bylaw, which, to Tony's point, did allow significant renovation when they had to happen with rights of return and such things. But I think it stepped in to stop that predatory sort of action of just removing people so that you can rent it out for a higher rate.
And a quick follow-up, is it working?
We think so. We have not had those complaints anymore about that sort of predatory renovation. We do have people occasionally contacting City Hall and saying, I've got a notice under my door. They've got a new owner for the building. We're worried. And we have processes in place in the city for us to actually reach out to the tenants and to reach out to the property owner to find out what their intent is and make sure the property owner knows what their rights are and make sure the tenants, most importantly, know what their rights are.
Okay. Parthi, to that end, that's the example in New Westminster. Mm-hmm. Would you acknowledge that those numbers tell a story and that these buildings, many of which are 40 years old, they can't just sit the way they are anymore. They got to be renovated.
Completely. And I think it's important to be clear. We're talking about a certain subset within landlords that are circumventing the rules. And, you know, credit to the province with Bill 97, the advanced certain tenant protections and rights. But we're speaking about those who are using deplorable tactics to essentially rent evict and to the mayor's point, gain higher rents. So that's the subset we're talking about. And we need to strike a balance and to ensure that there are greater steps to provide that protection. Hamilton started that conversation in Ontario. They've signaled their intent for a framework. And I think there needs to be greater intergovernmental cooperation. Professor Julie Ma at the U of T, was clear in that, and I completely agree. We need to see further enhancements to ensure the responsibility is not just with the tenant, it's with the municipality as well. I think for us at the table, we know how to navigate the system. For vulnerable tenants, that navigation to place that responsibility, I don't think is fair. And, you know, I saw that amongst mixed all incomes, that there's that need for the role of the government to play play that oversight body.
There is a narrative here, which you have heard many times, which is, you know, greedy, nasty landlord wants to renovate, triple the rent. Therefore, they throw people out and they don't care where they end up. And of course, they get new tenants when they come back.
Right.
In your view, how accurate is that narrative to real life?
So most of our members don't engage in this. They do the renovations at turnover. That's what we encourage our members to do, if that's possible. And if it's not, then to minimize disruptions as much as you can. We know that governments often need to step in and regulate for the outliers, and that's important, right? We do need to address those circumstances, but I don't think that's reflective of by no means the entire industry. I would say that certainly over the last couple of decades, or put another way, a couple of decades ago when people had more options, they could find another place to live, same community, similar rent, stock was not as old, it wasn't happening as frequently. We weren't talking about this so much. We're talking about it now for all the reasons that we know. And so we do have to look at it, as I said earlier, and I certainly believe that a provincial framework as opposed to patchwork of municipalities play a role. But a provincial framework that we all know is clear and that can work across the province, I think, is the way to go to ensure that we do find that right balance, that we ensure that we are protecting residents who need the protection, but allowing for renovations in circumstances of health and safety, or when it's determined by, say, a qualified third party that renovation is needed, and then we have a system in place to manage that.
Mayor Johnstone, can I get you, you could get away with doing this because you don't live here, but give these guys some advice. They're obviously trying to find the sweet spot that can make maximum buy-in for landlords and tenants. Based on your experience, what would you urge them to do?
Well, there is a role for the provincial government in this. We do a Residential Tenancy Act that's provincially regulated in the province. And they are active at helping with this. Since we brought in our bylaw and defended it and won an appeal, the province has changed the Residential Tenancy Act to bring in some similar protections. Not the same protections as we have, but they have brought in some similar and overlapping protections. So there is a role for the province in this, but there is a bit of a challenge in, British Columbia, much like Ontario, is a diverse province. and the housing market changes across the province. So there is a little bit of a role for some local solutions as well to deal with what's happening on the ground. And I'll say tenants often are very vulnerable, and frankly, they don't know who to talk to at the province often. I mean, City Hall is right there. They know how to go down to City Hall and talk, go to the counter and talk to somebody or talk to an elected official in their ward. It's a little bit more difficult to go to Toronto if you don't live in Toronto, or to go to Victoria and talk to your provincial official and find out what those protections are. Mm-hmm. So there is a role in the local government for us to be that advocate and to be that person who can connect people with the resources and let people know what protections they have. I think that's as important. Mm-hmm. I think the other lesson we learned out of this is that we can do it. We can balance it so that proper, you know, needed and required renovations can take place and building upgrades can take place. We recognize that this older building stock is also the very sensitive building stock to heat domes and other heat emergency events as climate change happens. So we did have to include that, and it can be included. And I would finally say it has not at all taken away from the desire to build new purpose-built rental in this city. That was one of the threats we heard, is that, you know, nobody is ever going to build another rental building in your city. And that's simply not the case. We have had a number of condo developments convert over to purpose-built rental because of incentives we provided to build that. Mm-hmm. So it has not taken away from the rental stock, from the new rental stock.
Let me follow up on that. Tony, both the federal and provincial governments have put lots of incentives in place in order to encourage purpose-built rental newly being constructed. Is it working?
Well, I mean, I think there are, unfortunately, economic headwinds that we're all dealing with in our lives, personally and professionally, that are you know, making things difficult. We are all looking forward to interest rates starting to come down. The measures that we're talking about, GST being removed from new rental construction, the regulations aren't out for that yet, so that's still working through the government process. The province is waiting. Provinces are waiting on the federal government to act on that.
So it sounds like a no.
So we need to see all the details, and we need to see everything go through the final make its way through the process to be able to start to show results.
Let me be a little mischievous here, can I? I'd love to find out what you need from him in order to satisfy your side of the argument, and I'd love to find out what you need from him in order for landlords to feel that they're not getting gouged as well. So can we have a bit of a debate between you two right now? Right. Just discuss. Parthi, what do you need from the landlords?
I think cooperation in how we negotiate with the province on how do we enhance Bill 97. We agreed that it's a subset of actors that are creating these rent evictions, dem evictions. Right. And coming back to Lenmore Court, we saw, and to the merest point, is the power of the municipality. For example, with Lenmore, we upheld the rental demolition permit as a tool because we saw these, unfortunate tactics being used, primarily to the point of looking at tenants leaving prior to the N13. Right. And when we held at community council the rental demolition, Monday morning, first thing, the landlord was on a WebEx call with us, and we're going through unit by unit where the concerns were, and they were immediately being addressed.
What do you need from
him? What we need is that conversation with the province. Premier's made a good step forward, is to enhance and create that. The province needs to set the policy framework and enhance and support municipalities. Because right now, the onus and responsibility is with the tenant, and with vulnerable populations, to navigate the system, it's difficult. So if the city staff are enabled and emboldened with that ability to regulate the bad faith actors, I think we've got balance.
Can you give him that?
I don't see why not. I mean, we don't have a lot of disagreement here. We agree that this is a subset. We agree that bad actors need to be addressed. Whenever the province brings forward legislation, increasing fines, increasing penalties for those actors, I'm always supportive of that, right? We don't condone that kind of behavior. Mm-hmm. So we need to work together, and we need to ensure that Bill 97, another bill that's been passed but not proclaimed, we need those regulations to come forward.
This is the Helping Homebuyers Protecting Tenants Act.
Right. The council was speaking to some of the provisions in there. I was supportive of that. We're supportive of that legislation. Let's move on. Let's get that going.
I'm sensing consensus here on that. Well, what do you need from him?
I think an understanding, but as the council's already said, this is not all people, right? I mean, a lot of times there is a need for understanding and awareness around who's doing this and who's not. What do I need from the councillor? The opportunity to continue to talk about the cases that are occurring that are not what any of us would want to see, and then advocate together to ensure that we get the framework necessary that the province brings forward, but then municipalities like City of Toronto can then, as they are the front line, can then obviously communicate to their own own constituents and their own residents.
Councillor, sorry, go ahead.
I was going to suggest maybe an area that for debate is that the conversation about, you know, New York City has an approach called rent stabilization, right? So perhaps that's an area that there may be contention. And I think, you know, debate is always good for democracy and how the government regulates housing. But there, you know, the scenario with, you know, if these purpose-built rentals take off, what's the mechanism to control the rent, well, to make it affordable?
Agree. You're not going to agree on rent controls, I know that, right?
Well, right. I'm open to conversations, right? But the other thing, too, I think that's important is an understanding that, and I think you've said this, that there are older buildings that have to be addressed. We can't just ignore it and just leave them be and let them continue to deteriorate. We have to have a process to address these aging buildings. But so I think that understanding that it does need to happen, because I think there's a view amongst some in the industry that when these bylaws come forward, the stated intention is for this to never happen. And never happening is not an option, I don't feel. Yeah. So we have to have a process that makes sense.
Let me bring His Worship, the mayor from British Columbia, back into this discussion. We have something here. Well, for 100 years, it was called the Ontario Municipal Board. Now they call it something else. I think the Ontario Land Tribunal or something like that.
Yeah.
Anyway, this is if you're unhappy, you appeal to this group. And most people emerge from that process even unhappier than they were before they went into it. Anyway. I don't know if you have a similar thing in BC. If you do, could you give us some advice on how to handle? Certainly, we have here enormous backlogs, which contribute to all of the problems we've discussed here. How do you handle that in BC?
We do have. It's a provincial body that does a very similar thing. And yes, the backlog is enormous. I think that fundamentally the challenge is that everybody is stressed in this situation. Everybody is economically stressed in this situation. It has to go back to the graph that you showed about the number of purpose-built rental places that have been built over the last couple of decades, and the fact that we simply don't have the building stock to have a healthy market. We have people who are in older apartments and in affordable apartments. We don't have enough vacancy for people to have flexibility to move to a different apartment or to you know, deal with their situation the way maybe a healthy market would. They move to a better apartment. Or move to a different place. We stopped building purpose-built rental in this country 30 years ago in a meaningful number. And when we stopped doing that, we've created a situation where the landlords are stressed because they have older buildings. The tenants are stressed because they have no options other than the place they're currently living in. And the system is stressed because all of those conflicts are arising, and we just don't have the systems to address all those conflicts. We need to build more purpose-built rental.
Mm-hmm. Parthi, talk to us if you would, because I'm sure as a member of City Council, you hear all the time about what goes on at the Ontario Land Tribunal and whether it is working in the interests of anybody. What do you hear?
There's considerable challenge from
that
communities
mean?
That, you know, the narrative is developers are getting what they want, that the composition of the OLT has changed dramatically from the OMB days, where from my understanding, speaking with those who were active at that time was, you know, you had architects, you had planners, you had engineers, you had a whole host of experts with development experience, and that's now
who will rule on the cases.
Exactly, and that's now not the case. So that's, you know, begs the question, when you look at the data coming out, the developers are not only getting what they want, but even increased density in areas that, you know, where the conversation about complete and healthy communities is not as present. So that conversation about OLT has proven to be very challenging. I've seen that from colleagues across the city.
All right. What do landlords think of the OLT process?
I mean, I think in terms of the number of purposeful rentals being built these days, I'm not sure if developers are getting everything they want. We're all acknowledging that there's not enough rental being built. I think all these systems are imperfect, and certainly there are backlogs. I'm much more aware and spend a lot more time, Steve, talking about the Landlord Tenant Board and the backlogs that occur there, and you're well familiar with that topic, because that, of course, is where landlord-tenant disputes are mediated. The Land Tribunal has a role, obviously, relative to, you know, that process of getting applications approved and so on, but the Landlord Tenant Board, of course, is where the rubber really hits the road relative to disputes that happen, and we're certainly seeing improvements there, but there is still a backlog. Government has made significant improvements and investments to get more adjudicators online to get things moving. Everyone needs fair access to justice. Everyone needs an opportunity to have their disputes heard in a timely fashion. And that's, I think, benefits everyone who uses the system. So improvements, but more needed.
We got less than 5 minutes to go here. And I guess I want to hear from each of you. There's a federal budget coming out next week. It would be unimaginable, I suspect, for it not to have a significant accent on housing of some kind. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure they put the thing to bed already, but I'd like to know what you all hope to see in next week's budget. Okay, Mayor Johnstone, what should be in it as it relates to our topic tonight?
More money for housing. I mean, that graphic that you showed about the number of purpose-built rental projects that are being built, that correlates with what happened in the early 1990s when the federal government got out of the business of building purpose-built rental. They used to build 20, 30,000 units a year of housing in this country, and they just got out of that business. So I appreciate the Housing Accelerator Fund, the work the government has done so far at the federal level in order to give cities the tools they need to get things built. But that has to do with speeding up approvals and doing that type of work. Fundamentally, the market is not going to supply the amount of purpose-built rental that we need. We need the federal government to supply money to help get new buildings built at the rate that they used to build them back in the 60s and the 50s and the 70s. That is what the market needs right now. With the way land prices are, the way construction costs are right now, the market simply cannot provide the affordable end of the rental spectrum anymore.
Okay,
so Parthi, I'm hoping to see the federal government get serious.
Gotcha. Parthi, when you read the budget next week, you will be looking, I'm sure you're going to be going line by line, looking for the number that the city of Toronto is going to be getting. And I'm sure every local councillor from municipalities all over the place are going to see what number are we getting. To show commitment, what would that number have to be, as far as you're concerned, for the city of Toronto?
Oh, that's a specific question. No, I don't want to speak to a number, but I think it needs to be demonstrable that there is that commitment to the mayor's point. The 60s and 70s were a golden period in which affordable rentals were being built. That role has been abdicated by successive administrations.
But if there's $500 million in the budget for housing for Toronto, would you come away thinking, that's okay, I can deal with that?
Of course, that's a significant investment.
How about $100 million?
Well, I think that the city of Toronto is such an important cog in the country, right? And for the financial capital, in so many ways, a center of business, then you need the affordable piece to address quality of life in Toronto. And this is something, that money could be invested in credit to the mayor for investing in MURA, the multi-unit residential acquisition program, into Rent Safe. These are safeguards that'll help tenants protect their rights and provide more affordable housing. And I think that's going to be key to the budget, is the investment we see in Toronto.
What do you need to see in the budget?
Well, the last week, it's been quite a series of announcements, as I'm sure you know.
It's kind of given it all up
it's
already.
It's over $20 billion, I think, that they've announced. So whether it's infrastructure, funding, which I'm sure Mayor Johnstone and the councillor would be very pleased with, because of course infrastructure is a huge issue relative to building new housing. So the $6 billion for that, other funds for a acquisition fund, more money for the apartment construction financing program. I think that's $15 billion. There's a lot out there, and so that's been announced. And so we're very encouraged to see the fine print on all of that, Steve. And so what do we want to see? We want to see the federal government making the investments that we've all been talking about, that will actually help make projects pencil. So if that's helping municipalities, if that's providing lower cost financing, because if you can't get the construction loans, you can't build the project. So our CMHC has that capability. We're looking forward to seeing those sorts of announcements. Areas where the government can really help relative to financing and relative to supporting getting housing built is the key.
And you feel they can and will do that?
Well, based on the announcement of the last week, it would seem like that's the direction we're heading in.
That seems it. Okay. Yeah. I want to thank the three of you for joining us on TVO tonight. Patrick Johnstone is the mayor of New Westminster, British Columbia. We thank you for being there for us on the left coast. Parthi Kandavel here in our studio, the Toronto councillor from Scarborough Southwest. Tony Irwin also in the studio, the Federation of Rental Housing Providers of Ontario, FRPO for short. Good discussion, you three. Many thanks.
The Agenda with Steve Paikin is made possible through generous philanthropic contributions from viewers like you. Thank you for supporting TVO's journalism.